Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this the Health Matters List Show. The election has occurred. The interesting thing is we are recording the show.
We haven't voted.
Yeah. We don't know how it turned out. This is a pre-election show. So either we're listing to the right or we're listing to the left. But whichever way we list, we have a bunch of lists that we want to talk with you about today.
One thing's for certain, though, Tony. There's chaos.
There is chaos. And we are all in a handbasket, not sure where we're headed.
Exactly.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. Welcome to the program. Shelley Irving, PA and a physician assistant. And assistant professor at the UK Physician Assistant Studies Program. Welcome, Shelley.
Hello.
And
that other guy.
Yeah. We also have to acknowledge the presence. The legal people tell us we've got to acknowledge the presence of UK Manager of Communications Infrastructure, Rick Phillips, who hopefully will tell us about our web presence. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right. Moorhead State Public Radio website. There's a page there. It's accessible from the front page. Find it. You'll see a list of the shows. Read the summary. There is the most important part is there is a link there to the audio. You can listen to it, download it right then and there. You can sign up for the podcast and have Health Matters delivered to you about 4 days after it's aired live on FM radio. After that, you know, we really don't know. I mean, it goes up about 4 days. Isn't that right, Tony, about 4 days?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then after that, you've listened to the show, you've decided, you know, these are people that I need to talk to, or I need to say something to or about. I
mean, or that's it.
Well, I mean,
somebody has to stop this.
There's a compelling reason to say something. And to do that, you go to Facebook, facebook.com/HM Radio Show. Obviously, you can just go to facebook.com and do a search for Health Matters Radio Show. But I would say there are a few programs named Health Matters, so you kind of got to make sure you get to the right one. But again, facebook.com/HM Radio Show. There you can interact with Health Matters. That's your chance to stop the madness. Just put in your comments. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Really, I hope what you don't like is about Tony, but I have the ability to ignore. You think I could do that, Tony? You honestly think I could ignore it?
No, things bother you.
Yeah. Wait till we get deeper in the show.
You stew about
Facebook.com is where you interact with Health Matters. We encourage you to do that. And in all seriousness, give us some show topics. Give us some interesting health things that you're interested in. If you've got a question, we really don't prefer to have a question about grandma's Alzheimer's, but we would like questions about Alzheimer's, right? So certainly get us topics, ask us things. You'll be amazed that we do, in fact, look at that page and we do, in fact, interact with our listeners. So it's there. Use it. Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, Lung Cancer Screening, reminding you, before you get your lung CT, answer me these questions three. Three questions that you need to ask before you are screened for lung cancer. Question number one, what is your age? That's right. Are you age 55 to 77 years old? You can be 55.
Are you allowed to ask that to everybody? Because I always thought you weren't allowed to ask a woman her age.
If you're going to do lung cancer screening, you got to ask.
Really?
There is no politeness to society when we're screening for lung cancer. 55 to 77 years old, 55 to 80 if you have private insurance. Now, the way this worked is they did a research trial, and in that research trial, they started at age 55. They screened them every year for 3 years, and they found that people over age 55 actually to 75 years old, they benefited from lung cancer screening when they screened them for 3 years starting at age 55. So Medicare says, okay, that's fine. We'll screen them every year from 55 to 77. Since they were screened for 3 years, we'll go 3 years past the maximum age of the study. Then some people went through and mathematically calculated, well, you could do it 55 to 80, and that's for people with private insurance. They get that. Question number two, are you a current or former smoker who's quit within the past 15 years? If you smoke now, if you have quit within the past 15 years, you're eligible for lung cancer screening. And question number three, do you have at least a 30-pack year smoking history? That is, have you smoked one pack a day for 30 years, or two packs a day for 15 years, or three packs a day for 9 1/3 years, whatever it is. If the number of packs and the number of years multiplied together get to 30, then you, in fact, would be eligible. So once again, 55 to 77, 55 to 80 if you have private insurance, current or former smoker, quit within the past 15 years, and a 30-pack year, one pack a day for 30 years smoker, then you are eligible for lung cancer screening. Now, we'll talk about this more in our second fractional portion, but there are a lot of things you have to think about. Lisa Richardson, who is a physician and the director of the CDC's Division of Cancer Prevention and Control, reminds us lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death among men and women in the United States, and it is the second most common cancer among men and women in the United States. The sheer numbers mean that a lot of people die of lung cancer. More than 200,000 people are diagnosed, more than 150,000 people die, including 3,500 Kentuckians every year. That's over a quarter of all deaths from cancer in the U.S. The most important thing you can do, stop smoking. Stop smoking as soon as you can. But you can be screened, and that may be able to pick up the cancer when it is small, and it may then lower your risk of dying of a cancer. So that's our sponsor for today's show, Lung Cancer Screening, reminding you before you get your lung CT, you must answer me these questions three. And we'll talk more about that in our second fractional portion. Rick, the first article we talk about today was written absolutely for you. It involves crime. It involves homicide. It involves cell phones. It involves 3D printing. Could you have a more Rick Phillipsian article in a Health Matters radio show? I don't think so.
I don't know. You lost me at crime. Do you think I'm a criminal?
I think you like crime. I think you
I don't even like crime dramas on TV. Just ask my wife.
You really don't?
No.
Okay. The crime.
I am not your partner in crime.
I watch the crime dramas because there is one character that I always like. This is the character that they interview. And again, these are homicide people. They come up, and this guy's doing something. I don't know what he's doing. He's doing something. And when they come up, they say, did you know this person? And he always says something like, yeah, what's it to you? But he keeps doing whatever he's doing. You've got two policemen asking you about a murder, and you apparently you're not able to stop what you're doing.
Well, you're busy.
To talk to the police.
I mean, you're busy, Tony.
And then here's the kicker.
We
always ask him. He says, why would I want to kill her?
Well, how do you know it's a her?
She was a lingerie model. You don't watch crime shows. She's always a lingerie model. You're missing that key part of the crime show. She's a lingerie model. She was murdered on the beach. Everybody knows that. So he says, why would I want to kill her? And then they explain to this guy, and you think about it. If someone charges you with murder, you're not going to keep doing what you're doing, and you're certainly not going to ask them to explain why you would. I'm going to start telling them why I didn't kill her. I'm not going to ask them why I killed her. That
I'm
going to
ask
silly.
Them, who are you?
All right, back to the story. I just had to get that off my chest. Detroit Free Press. This was July 31st, but I just ran across it. Lansing, Michigan. Lansing Police Department had a problem. They had a smartphone. Belonged to a homicide victim. Could contain key evidence, but they couldn't get into it. It was locked. And it was locked by a fingerprint.
It was actually locked by multiple technologies, but the worst one, I think, was fingerprinting.
Right. The woman was dead.
Right.
The fingerprints, in fact, were gone, but they needed to get into this phone. Now, obviously, before, the police have had court warrants allowing them to get to suspects' fingerprints, but this woman no longer was able to give a fingerprint. Luckily, they had a set of her fingerprints, but they were on paper. How do you unlock a phone, a cell phone, with fingerprints on paper? Interestingly enough, the world's expert, a guy named Dr. Anil Jain, was at Michigan State University, 5 minutes away from the police department. So they called him on the phone and asked for help. They couldn't use the victim's fingers. They tried copying the fingerprints, put them on a special paper, wouldn't unlock the phone. They enhanced them, filling in the missing ridges and valleys, just like on the TV shows. And then, this is genius, Rick, they printed a set of fingerprints on a 3D printer.
Nice.
So they have now fake fingers.
With latex.
But it didn't work.
Of course not.
And then, so they went back to their enhanced 2D fingerprints, and they decided to try those. But which finger? Well, they figured the thumb.
No.
Because you hold the phone with the thumb. If you're going to fingerprint lock your phone, you'd use your thumb. They put the thumb fingerprint, 2D enhanced, on the phone. Bam, it unlocks. And there was Dr. Jane says he's reporting the Detroit Free Press. There was silence for a few minutes. We were all wondering, did it really work? In fact, it did really work. They were able to unlock the phone. They were able to download the evidence from the phone.
Was it in fact evidence, and did it in fact help them with the case, or was this all just a big goose chase to show you can unlock somebody's phone?
That's a good question.
You just got to kill them first.
You know, and we didn't. The follow up was not there. Once the phone was unlocked, this story is over. Roll the credits. Play the theme music. It's done. The phone is unlocked.
I don't know. Yeah, okay.
But I would have thought the 3D fingerprinting, that was just genius to have a set of fingerprints. You know,
it was genius, yet it didn't work.
Yeah, and that bothers me because, you know, in all the future science fiction movies, you always cut the guy's finger off, and that's how you get past the fingerprint scanner.
But they actually take the finger and hold it up there.
Right, but wouldn't
it be... Which probably would work in this case.
Yeah, but isn't it simpler just to 3D print the guy's finger? Then you've got to...
But we've already proven that doesn't work.
It didn't work in this... Well, they tried to 3D print it off...
It would have worked on TV shows.
An image.
It would have worked on TV shows.
I think if they had scanned the guy's actual finger, or the woman's actual finger, instead of the written record of fingerprints, it might have worked.
Maybe. That's possible.
Yeah.
It might have.
And it's a lot easier than... You know, it's not as dramatic as cutting off the fingers, which is always what they do in science fiction, or cutting out people's eyes or whatever.
Dramatic is not the word that comes to mind for me. Draconian. They're... You know, possibly
gross.
Even, you know, yeah, gross or, you know, but you stick with, you know, dramatic.
Dramatic. Well, it makes a point, but, and it's something, you know, you basically just say, would you maybe stick your finger in the copier here and, just, you know, hold my place.
So at what point, but it does bring up the question, at what point will we stop 2D fingerprinting? At what point will we start 3D fingerprinting or... Possibly scanning retinas, possibly,
right.
You know, everything that we can do. I mean, my Surface Pro computer that's sitting in front of me right now uses facial recognition to log in. I never have to log in, right? It just looks at me and says, hey, I know you. You can have access.
But anything you use to give access, then I can copy.
So how is my, if something happens to me, how's my wife ever going to get into my computer?
Well, it's fairly simple, apparently. I can reproduce any aspect of your biometric locks with my 3D printer. So I'll just make me a 3D Rick face. I can use it Halloween.
Nice try. Nice try.
And I can unlock your tablet.
You know, here's the biggest problem you have with that costume, Tony.
No, wait. This is great. So you're going to tell me the biggest problem. I've 3D printed your face.
Yep.
And I'm using it as a Halloween costume. You're going to tell me the biggest problem. There's a whole lot of problems.
No. You've chosen a costume that absolutely nobody will recognize. So you will. Everybody will go, well, boy, there's an idiot.
Which is perfectly fine with me. I have no problems with it.
Who are you again?
Yeah, but you know, you think your fingerprint is unique, but on the other hand, honestly, I can reproduce that fingerprint. I'm okay with reproducing that fingerprint on my 3D printer, so I can do absolutely anything. Okay, so I think it's. I'm not sure. Biometrics was supposed to be a safe thing.
You couldn't even find the print button on a 3D printer.
Fair enough. I can't do it. But technologically, I can reproduce any biometric. I can break any biometric lock just by simply copying stuff. You, on the other hand, can get.
I can see you now sitting
you can
on a copier.
Change the subject by taking a break. We're going to take a break as well and come back with our second fractional portion. Hopefully, it will be a little bit more informative. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver, and with us, as always recently, is Shelley Irving from the UK Physician Assistant Studies Program. Welcome, Shelley.
Hello.
And this is the Health...
Why didn't you make a costume out of her? Why did it have to be me?
I think you know the answer to that. I'm trying to scare people.
Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I set
this
you up
the
on that one,
Health
didn't I?
Matters list show. We've got now some lists and some fairly interesting lists. Medical stuff, a lot of it is about lists. You think about the things that can cause something and you make a list.
So Tony, in your career, how many lists have you either made or told people about through your walking around in the hospital?
You make lists every day.
Yeah, so I'm saying, so you're we talking 10,000 probably in your life?
Let's see. All right, 30 years. I am work every day. Maybe I'll make it light. I'll go 30 years.
So maybe 9,000?
Yeah. Golly, I can't even do the math here. This is much more than that. I got to, if I did one a day for 200 days a year for 30 days, I'm already up to 6,000.
Yeah, right? And so, I'm just saying, when I worked at St. Clair, you were the list master, right?
You know, I appreciate
and
that.
Sometimes you even went outside of the top 10. Sometimes you did the top 11 or the top 7.
Things get complex.
Sometimes the top 15, although you really never exceeded 20, I suspect. I know the reason, but that's okay.
Rick is a big digits guy. If you haven't noticed, he says, okay, you get over 20, your shoes are off, and you're going to have to use someone else's toes. And that just starts to get a little bit too familiar.
Yeah, they don't invite you back.
We start the list. We're going to go back to our sponsor one more time. This is the lung cancer screenings, our sponsor, reminding you, before you get your lung CT, answer me these questions free. Question number one, what is your age? If you are 55 to 77 years old and Medicare, you can get a screening test, a screening CAT scan for lung cancer. If you're 55 to 80 years old and have private insurance, you can get a screening CT for lung cancer. You have to be a current smoker or former smoker who quit within the past 15 years. That's the second question. Question three, do you have at least, we call it a 30-pack year smoking history, a pack a day for 30 years, two packs a day for 15 years, and so forth. Those are the questions. And again, according to Dr. Lisa Richardson, director of CDC's Division of Cancer Prevention and Control, this is a very, very common cancer, a very, very deadly cancer. She says only 1 in 20 lung cancer patients survive for 5 years if the disease has spread. If we find it early, more than half the people survive for 5 years. So if you cannot stop smoking, first of all, stopping smoking is absolutely the best way to avoid lung cancer. But if you cannot stop smoking, then you can get this screening if you smoke for more than 30 years, quit less than 15, and if you're 55 to 77 years old in Medicare, 55 to 80 years old and have private insurance, you can get this lung cancer screening. Now, lung cancer screening is not easy. It's not simply a one and done. You have to get the CAT scan every year. The other thing is that CAT scan sees a lot of stuff that's not lung cancer. You may need additional x-rays. You might need additional testing, including biopsies and bronchoscopies and things like that. But in the research, when they did this, there was a 20% reduction in the mortality in the group that got the CAT scans from lung cancer, and there was almost a 7% reduction in their all-cause mortality. They lived longer. So yes, there's extra scans, there's radiation, there's biopsies, there's a lot of trouble. But if you are worried, you're a smoker, there's a history of lung cancer in the family, if you smoke heavily, you're worried about lung cancer yourself, that CAT scan could be life-saving. That's our sponsor, Lung Cancer Screening. Now, back to the list then. The Cleveland Clinic put out, and I love this, they put out their top 10 medical innovations to watch in 2017. What will we be looking for as 2017 unfolds? Well, we're probably going to be distracted by our president, whoever our president is. Now elected is, and we at Health Matters are still in suspense because we recorded this last week.
Our crystal ball on the election is just a little foggy right now.
Absolutely. We have no idea which criminal, which unsavory person, which part of the population we're going to anger and dismay.
We don't know which blonde's going to get it. Right?
You're back to your crime scene. See, that's it. Now, I will tell you which blonde's going to get it, the lingerie model, but I was talking about the president. I don't know why you keep bringing this up. All right, but back to the Cleveland Clinic. Number one innovation to watch is the microbiome. How many times have we talked about this? The trillions of bacteria that create a community in your body, they are as much of your identity and may even influence your thinking as much as your own body cells. That is the number one innovation to watch. We are now in a position where we start to understand how all these germs react to antibiotics, how they may cause disease or prevent disease, and they expect to see some significant treatment recommendations coming out of manipulating your own microbiome. So that's number one. And Rick, we've talked about that before.
I don't remember.
Well, you weren't... you know, this show.
It's so easy to render you speechless.
I'm trying to impress our listeners that we are on top of things.
Don't understand. Our listeners know us, Tony.
Yeah, they know you're not.
Have you ever heard the term lipstick on a pig?
You're back to the 3D face now, aren't you?
Here we go. Right?
I'm going to 3D print lipstick if that's what you want. Hey, we seem to be stuck in the first fractional portion here. It's like an episode of Twilight Zone.
No, no. You ever see the movie Groundhog Day?
Yeah, that's it. We're Groundhog Day in the first fractional portion. I can't get away from lingerie models.
The same music plays before this starts every time.
All right. Shelley.
Yes.
Dude, that was going to happen.
Yeah, it's time to shift gears. The second one, drugs for diabetes patients that reduce heart-related disease and death. Now, this was a pretty big one. For a long time, the sole test of a diabetes drug is, does it make your sugar go lower? Now, we didn't ask the question, does it make your life better? Does it lower your risk of dying? We simply watched the sugar and it went down. And we got into some trouble. There were some drugs that lowered your sugar, but they did horrible things and shortened your lifespan. There have been, there's one dirt cheap drug called metformin, our favorite diabetes drug. It is safer than many of the others. It lowers your risk of having heart disease. It appears to be neutral or perhaps beneficial on your weight and also on your risk of cancer. And it's dirt cheap. It costs $4 for a month's supply of that drug. It's an absolutely wonderful drug. There are a couple of new ones, expensive, but they have been shown to lower your risk of heart disease. The two that they mentioned is empagliflozin and liraglutide. The empagliflozin is one that I didn't like the mechanism. I've had to swallow my words. You may remember the original drug of that classification was something called Invokana. It makes you pee your sugar down. I thought that was stupid, ridiculous. It doesn't even claim to do anything to control the things that generate the sugar in diabetes. You just simply pee more sugar out. Yet, empagliflozin, a drug of that class, actually lowered people's risk of having a heart attack. I'm very disappointed, Shelley, in that, but I have to acknowledge that looks like both empagliflozin and liraglutide, they're up there now with metformin in my diabetes regimen.
Yep, I'm excited about those. I think there's starting to be some good insurance coverage for those that have private insurance.
That's important because these drugs are quite expensive. This is what the Cleveland Clinic people said. Experts predict 2017 will mark a complete shift in the lineup of medicines prescribed for diabetes. We're going to get away from some older drugs that have no benefit on your life expectancy or your risk of heart disease and frankly had a lot of side effects. And I think we're going to shift to some newer drugs that at least might do some good for you rather than just for your lab test. Next one, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I frankly don't understand it. Cellular immunotherapy to target leukemia and lymphoma. That is the idea of harnessing your body's T cells, your own immune system, to target the tumors. Those tumors are so close to your body's own tissues, we have had a great deal of difficulty trying to either have chemotherapy or immunotherapy, for that matter, because it's so close that you could attack your own cells rather than the cancer cells. But they believe they have found a way to shift it over and make your body attack the cancer cells instead of your own. Your body, in fact, cures itself. A lot less side effects than chemotherapy. That's all I know about that. Maybe we'll get that in more detail later. Number four. They call it liquid biopsies to detect circulating tumor DNA. That is, when a tumor is present, when a cancer is present, it not only the cells metastasize, but also bits and pieces of its DNA will get into your blood or your spinal fluid. So rather than putting a needle in a difficult place where the tumor is, we simply take a routine blood sample or a routine sample of your spinal cord fluid, and we can look for the pieces of DNA in that and can diagnose the tumor that way. It would save a lot of unpleasant needles in risky places and complications of biopsies, and we're starting to do that more and more. Again, part of our emphasis on the human DNA and genetics, that's going to be pretty good. And this is part of the Cancer Moonshot Initiative. It's only a matter of time before cancer and treating cancer is as routine as your annual checkup. Get a blood test, look for tumor DNA in your blood, and that saves you a lot of these awkward tests that we're doing right now. All right, Rick, you're back in the mix now. Number five, Cleveland Clinic says this is, in fact, medical innovations. They said driverless cars and other automated safety features are a medical innovation to what? More than 38,000 fatal automobile crashes, but it could be fatal automobile automobile crashes. I don't know. But automatic safety features, collision warning systems, adaptive cruise control will make a dent in dangerous car accidents. Safety and legal questions remain, but 2017 is expected to be the year when these things really hit the mainstream. Your car, in fact, will surround you with protection.
Do you really believe that? Do you believe that 2017 that's going to happen, or do you think it'll be longer? I say it'll be longer.
Okay. I got a new truck, and the new truck has the thing that you push the button, and it will tell you when you drift out of your lane.
Right.
That's so
provided
annoying.
You listen.
Yeah. Well, it's so annoying, as a matter of fact. I just drift all over the road. I'm surprised I haven't been pulled
over. Texting.
No.
Ooh, I almost hung you up there.
Though the best I can say is I apparently just have difficulty in keeping the truck in the lane.
You're reading crime novels.
On the air, I'm going to give you some advice, okay?
I'm gonna give you the lingerie model. I start thinking about her, and then all of a sudden I'm off the road.
I'm going to give you some advice.
Sure.
Whoever taught you how to drive has you looking over the hood of the car, right? That's what you do. You look over the hood of the car. That's why you move from left to right to left to right. You need to learn to look at the horizon. You need to look at the curvature of the earth and be that far out when you look, and you won't do that anymore. Ask me how I know. Come on. Ask me.
First of all, that's ridiculous, but okay.
That's how you fly an airplane.
Sure.
Otherwise, you're going to be going left and right the whole time. You'll end up, and gas is expensive. You don't want to do
that. But I will tell you, yes, when I was young, I looked at the pavement right over the front of the car. I learned to focus on the horizon, and then I learned to not care as much, and frankly, I
so now you're back to being a kid.
Pay attention, yeah.
So you're basically closer to a kid now than an adult.
Now my truck also has a system where it warns me if I'm too close to the car in front. I get this little green vehicle,
and that's went off with you.
Yeah, it did for no obvious reason, and so I turned it down. But see, in 2017, these things are going to actually work because I wasn't anywhere near the car.
But 2017, you're not going to actually buy your truck again.
No, this is one and done.
That's kind of the point I was kind of alluding to, is while the features may become mainstream in 2017, how many people actually buy a new car every year? Right, so usually cars are on a 3 to 5 year life cycle for people that do that regular, you know, kind of go through a regular replacement of their car, and it's going to take that refresh cycle, that essentially life cycle as we call it, to actually get that new technology into people's hands. Right, and, I mean the same thing with backup cameras. Yeah. It's going to take another 2 years, and backup cameras will be pretty much on every mainstream car that you buy. I mean, I rent cars a lot when I'm travel, and it's rare to come across a car anymore that doesn't have a backup camera.
Now, all right, let's take the backup camera. It's a safety feature.
Correct.
But it looks straight back. It will not tell you that there's a car barreling down the parking lot from the side.
Well, it depends on the wide-angle nature of the lens. I mean, you can get some indication that it's coming.
But if I rise up in my seat and turn around and look behind me, I can see that panoramic view, and I can see that car coming. The other thing is the cameras, and I know you've seen them, they have those little red lines when you turn the wheel that
or projects green or yellow,
where you got to
go.
Yeah. Do you trust those?
Sure.
In a tight spot.
They're actually, well, the thing is a parking. but Tony, you're saying rely solely on that. I'm saying that's extra information that you have at your fingertips to help you do what you're trying to do. Let me tell you, a backup camera changes the way you parallel park. Absolutely. Parallel parking is incredibly easy with a backup camera.
With a backup camera. Do you then, when you're backing up, you just look at the camera? You do not look over your shoulder anymore?
Depends on where I'm at. If I'm at my house, I only look at the camera because I know my house and
sure.
I know
okay.
the dimensions.
Gotcha.
And if I'm outside, you still – I mean, and let's be honest. I work at a university campus. I'm sorry to offend the people that are listening on the university campus, but there's too many pedestrians that don't really care about cars. And I am not – I'm surprised that more people don't get hit by cars on university campuses because they just don't pay attention. They're playing Pokemon. They're looking – down, they go out in the door. I realize you have the right of way in a crosswalk. I think everybody understands a pedestrian has the right of way in a crosswalk. So you've got the law on your side. It's hard to enforce the law when you're dead. You know, but if you step out in front and the car doesn't care about the law, then you're going to get hit. And I can't tell you how many people just step out in front of you. Now, they're assuming I'm going to stop, and legally I'm supposed to stop. But what about the people who don't? And I'm amazed that it doesn't happen.
So you love the backup camera. Now, Shelley, I know it.
So
very
on
least.
Campus, you have to look out the window because there are pedestrians all around.
Right. I know when you're working, you've got a company car with a backup camera because I've done house calls with you. Mm-hmm. Do you have a backup camera in your?
Yes, I do.
So when you back up, do you look forward in the camera or do you look over your shoulder?
I'm like Rick. It depends.
Okay.
So I'm at home.
Ha, ha, ha.
I look at the camera.
Okay, fair enough. Now, here's there was an artificial intelligence, the O'Reilly Artificial Intelligence Conference, September, New York. They were talking about driverless cars, and this is Tom Davenport of Babson College. He said, most people would rather be killed by a human being than a machine.
That's a weird statement.
It is. His point is, if we're going to put these safety features in, if we're going to make a driverless car, it has to be darn near perfect. Because if it's perfect 99% of the time, then it's got to have a way to get your attention and say, hey, you need to take the wheel now. Otherwise, we'll just keep reading our trashy novels, crime novels throughout the
you'll
accident.
Be watching TV. I know what you'll be doing.
Yeah. Well,
some lingerie model.
You were in a driverless car. You've ridden a driverless car, right?
No. I don't know where you got that.
I thought you did that on the West Coast. You did not. Okay.
No. I drove in a lane next to one. I watched them drive by me, and they're reading the newspaper.
Right. And so that's the question then. When do you take over? How much do you oversee a driverless car? Do you sit there and look around? Obviously, you take the paper, or you do your reading, or you work on your computer, you do something. So you're not paying attention unless the car tells you to.
2 weeks ago, I actually moved my daughter to Utah, and I drove a U-Haul 1,701 miles door-to-door. Boy, I wish I had autopilot. And look, Wyoming, you're a beautiful state, but it's a boring drive.
Yeah, you should. It's Wyoming beautiful should to look be at. Moved to the West Coast. If you didn't have to go through it, it would be a fine place to go to occasionally.
Right. Now, and you know what's amazing? And I'm going to steal the last 2 minutes from you. You know what's amazing is I don't know that I could live where every 10 miles there are actual drawbridge gate kind of thing, like a train gate, you know, or what do you call it? One of the arms that comes down and blocks the road, right? They have those all along the interstate out there with big signs saying, you know, road potentially closed, right? I mean, because I guess when it snows out there, they actually close the interstates. I'm thinking, I don't know that I want to be in a place that has to prepare to close the interstates on a regular basis.
Gotcha. Back to what we talked about in the time we got left.
Would you
rather be killed?
What would an autopilot do if the road was closed? Was it going to know that?
Right.
When it comes up and there's a gate down, I think it's going to recognize the gate. It's going to slow down to a stop, and it's going to say, Rick, take over.
But I can't because the road's closed.
But you're going to have to be able to drive it. The point, though, the question. Here's the question. Would you rather be killed by a human or a machine?
Do I have a third option not be killed at all?
You're a lingerie marine. In this scenario.
I like the way you think.
It's like the election. It's not going to end well.
Yeah, it's just not. But think about that for a minute. You know, if you make a machine, it's got to be darn near perfect. Because we will not accept, even if we could cut our death rate in half, car crash death rate in half, by going to driverless cars.
So if the machines
killed half as many people as the people would, I think we still could not tolerate
dying
by machine.
We don't have enough time. But I'm going to tell you, how many times have you flown from Atlanta to California? Because I promise you, there was no pilot flying your plane during that. That thing was on autopilot the entire way. So you don't mind being in a 747 or a 737 or 57 or whatever. You don't mind being in a big old jet with a bunch of jet fuel and letting an autopilot do it. But boy, gosh, let's don't get on that road and do it.
Right, because there's nobody like me that's going to pull up and bump the plane to see what it does. But if I'm driving along the road,
what if your autopilot in the air goes, oh no, you take over?
Hopefully there was a pilot on the plane. I thought that's the way it worked. I'll tell you the way we work. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. Yes, we're on autopilot. Yes, this is Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. And with us also for the third and final fractional portion, as she was last week, the week before, and hopefully will continue in the future, from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistance Program, Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
Our show
is...
You don't think
we're going to scare her off?
She is a remarkably resilient woman. She has been battered by show after show of Health Matters and continues to sit behind the mic.
I don't get it.
I think last week was the test.
We did a political show. This, though, is the Health Matters List Show. I ran across some lists and thought it would be fun to put these lists on. And so far, it has been fun. I'll just say that talking about it. We were talking about the Cleveland Clinic Top 10 Medical Innovations to Watch in 2017. Number one, the microbiome, that is the germs that live on you and in you. We are starting to learn how to manipulate them both to diagnose and to treat illnesses. And the Cleveland Clinic believes that's going to be really big in 2017. Number two is drugs for diabetes that actually reduce your risk of heart-related disease and death. We've had metformin for a long time that does that. We've had other drugs that were newer and spiffier and had more glitter on them, and yet they did not do those things. Now we have both empagliflozin and liraglutide, two new drugs, fairly expensive drugs, but they do show a lower rate of heart-related problems than the standard diabetes drugs. Three was harnessing your immune system to target leukemia and lymphoma. That has been a difficult trick because we have had difficulty in distinguishing these cancers from the underlying tissues, but we think are starting to make some progress there. Four, we call it liquid biopsies, checking for DNA, cancer DNA fragments in your bloodstream, in your body fluids, and that may be a way to screen for cancers without sticking needles in you or getting radiation and x-ray tests and things like that. Five, which we got stuck on for a long time, driverless cars and automated safety features. Again, there is a lot of electronics going into your car that may turn out to protect your life and protect your health in the future, although we do see some problems and issues with that. Six is an odd one, and I'll try to explain this. They called it fast healthcare interoperability resources. This is the 2017, according to the Cleveland Clinic, the year that we finally make sense of the tangled web healthcare has woven, thanks in part to a standard. This will essentially function as an interpreter between two healthcare systems or offices that have developed their own languages. That is, when we set up the electronic medical record, the promise was that these systems would talk to each other, and anywhere you go, your previous health records would flash up to any physician or any healthcare person that was treating you. We could also pull things up from one clinic to another, display them in dashboards so that when I or Shelley walks in the room, we'd have all the information we need to treat you. That has, in fact, not happened at all. As a matter of fact, Shelley and I are not even walking in the room. We're so busy typing on computers. For every hour we spend with patients, the studies show we're spending 2 hours on the computer, and so the computers, in fact, have slowed us down immensely. Perhaps now if the systems talk to each other, now we can then move to the promise of the electronic medical record, which has largely been unfulfilled. Fair enough, Shelley?
Yes, I agree.
Seven, ketamine for drug-resistant depression. Ketamine is an anesthetic medicine. It can improve symptoms of depression within 24 hours. Oh, my goodness, what an advance that would be. Depression, even the best medicines we've got take weeks to work. And during those weeks, you do not necessarily feel well. As a matter of fact, Weaver's rule with antidepressant medicines, the side effects come first, the benefits come later. That's not unique to me. That's a pretty common pharmacological principle. And this right here, to being able to turn around a depression in hours rather than in weeks would be an amazing thing. Eight, 3D visualization and augmented reality for surgery. Well, why not? It's in our smartphones now. Rick, there is a commercial. I know you don't watch commercials. There is a commercial on TV that makes my blood boil every time it comes on during the lingerie murder show. They have four people sitting on the train, and this guy pulls out his Google phone, and he starts asking it questions, and everyone else is amazed with his smartphone. Tell me the last time you were amazed with somebody else's phone. Yeah, I hate that.
You know, you're talking to the guy who has the phone that I can put into the VR headset and do virtual reality. You're talking to the guy who has the phone that I go, okay, Google, and my phone lights up and starts doing what I tell
so
it.
What?
So I'm not – that guy doesn't exist. I'm that guy.
So, you know. You can imagine if I had driven 1,701 miles with Rick to move Sarah in, he would have been showing me all of his phone tricks throughout the whole state of Wyoming. This is why we are friends, but there is a wall, Rick. There is a wall.
I tried calling you while I was on the road, and you ignored me.
Well, at any rate, they're talking about the very thing, and the commercial ends with one of his co travelers, has on the 3D glasses and is 3D-ing off his phone, and I'm sick of the whole thing. But it does, if you can do that on a train, you can imagine that will help practice surgery. It will also, by these 3D technologies, you can become more precise. You can magnify things. You're working in a giant space rather than a small space. Small movements can be seen, and you can really you can reduce your risk of complications. The market is still growing. Imagination's running wild. Several hospitals will be adapting virtual reality tools in 2017, again, to their surgery suites. So that's a pretty big one. That's number 8.
Yeah.
Self-administered HPV testing. Now, HPV, human papillomavirus, is the virus that leads to most cases of cervical cancer. There is an office test for that, but we will probably be doing home HPV testing in the future to determine your risk. It's a nice thing. It saves you some trouble. Again, how that integrates with pap smears and detecting and preventing cervical cancer is not entirely clear to me, but I think there will be some combination of this testing and maybe continuing with pap smears. Who knows? Maybe if we vaccinate and do this test, we may actually, pap smears may go away, which I think most of my patients
would be
pleased with.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not really sure, but at any rate, we're going to get the home test there. And then number 10, this is something that maybe you wouldn't think so much about as a consumer of healthcare, but they have bioabsorbable stents. Those stents that they place to prop the arteries of your heart open, they are metal. They are with you for life. It is possible then to put a stent in, hold the artery open until it the channel is reestablished, and then the thing gradually goes away on its own, so you'll wind up with no metal in your body, and nothing to cause additional scarring. A nice thought. And that's the top 10 from the Cleveland Clinic. That's one of the lists that I wanted to get through. Before we do our second list, I've got a reminder. I've got to do our sponsor. Our sponsor for the final fractional portion of the show, lung cancer screening. Before you get your lung CT, answer me these questions 3. Question 1, what is your age? Your age needs to be between 55 and 77 years old for Medicare, 55 to 80 for private insurance. Question 2, are you a current smoker or former smoker who quit within the past 15 years? If you currently smoke or you've quit less than 15 years ago, you're eligible for lung CT screening. And question number 3, do you have at least a 30-pack year? Have you smoked for 30 years, one pack a day, or 15 years, 2 packs a day, then you are eligible for lung cancer screening. Now, the other things we'll ask, do you have any symptoms? If you have symptoms, it's no longer a screening test. Are you healthy enough to have surgery if we found something? There's really no reason to go looking for something if you're already on oxygen and you're not able to tolerate surgery. And then finally, are you willing to receive a curative treatment? Because if you're not, there's really no point in finding cancer, telling you have cancer, and then not doing anything about it. We have pretty much ruined your life. Again, the benefits: a 20% reduction in lung cancer deaths in the screened group that used the CAT scanner, a reduced all costs, lung cancer and everything else, 7% less likely to die of anything in the study, which went for 3 years and 5-year follow-up. The problems: these scans are going to be positive. They may need additional scans. They may need biopsies and other testing, including things such as bronchoscopy. The bronchoscopy and the biopsies could lead to bleeding, infections, collapsed lung. You could die from the getting the follow-up test things. It's possible you could have some complication. And it did happen in the study, but overall they saved many more lives than they lost, reducing the risk of dying of lung cancer 20%. Screening is not a substitute for smoking cessation. That is the key thing. But we can get your survival rate up from 1 in 20 up to 1 in 2 if we screen widely. We still need to get you off the cigarettes, though. That's our sponsor, Lung Cancer Screening. Before you get your lung CT, answer those questions 3. Now, next list, and we'll probably end the show talking about this list, and hopefully Shelley will sound off because I'm really tired of hearing from Rick. Look, I'm sorry. You used up all your show time in the second fractional portion. You know that. You have an allotment, and you used it up.
I vote for an autopilot for host.
Okay.
I don't know about you, Shelley, but I'm ready to vote on that.
I
think we can get 99.9% accuracy.
Do we need to recount the minutes?
This is Choosing Wisely UK. This is United Kingdom. So this is really a look at an entirely different healthcare system. I want you to be aware of that. This is the Academy of Medical Royal Colleges, a published list of 40 unnecessary treatments that were very common, and this came from the BBC. They say, if you are about to get a treatment, you should ask your doctor, do I really need this test, treatment, or procedure? What are the risks of it? What are the side effects of it? Are there other safer, simpler options? And what will happen if I don't do anything? Those are the questions. Now, they then had 40 unnecessary treatments. We do not have time to review 40, so I was going to go over just a few that caught my eye, and we can talk about those. Number 7, sterile saline is unnecessary for cleaning wounds. Tap water is just as effective. Unless you have a really large wound, you don't really need to buy the medical saline at the drugstore. You can simply run it under the tap water. And I'm a little surprised at that. I think for cut fingers and things like that, I think we probably know that. We just go in and wash it out.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no reason to clean those small wounds. Just wash them off with water. Soap and water is recommended if the wound is dirty, and then put a Band-Aid on it. It's all you need to do. Number 8, frail patients who are near death do not need to continue all medications, only those that control symptoms, unless they're otherwise advised. Now, what we're talking about here is if you're close to dying, it's probably time to rethink whether or not you need to continue treating your cholesterol. And a lot of times, as you get closer to dying, your blood pressure may get lower. You may not need those high blood pressure medicines. We can make life a lot simpler for you. And, Jelly, that's what you do for a living.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and oftentimes, people will feel better once we stop those medications. And, you know, these folks are oftentimes at risk of fall. And if they're taking an aspirin a day, or you are on the statins that's causing pain or weakness in their legs, I don't want them to fall.
You know, and not only do they feel better, but also some studies of people with cancer who are near death find that paying close attention to their symptoms will make them live longer than trying to give them more chemotherapy and fight the cancer. The cancer does not turn out to be the problem. The frailness, the side effects of many of their medicines does. So this is, we agree with that at Health Matters, that if a person has a very limited life expectancy, it's time to revisit and reevaluate those medicines and clear out the unnecessary medicines, the ones that don't seem to be making them feel better. I'll skip to number 10. Prescription drugs to treat blood pressure and prevent heart disease are not necessary unless the blood pressure is consistently above 140 to 160 on the top number, 90 to 99 on the bottom number in people with additional risk factors. That in no way reflects what we do here in the U.S.
No.
Those people would be considered absolutely in need of medications with or without risk factors. The number we go on here is 140 over 90. So when you're talking about numbers up to 160 on the top number, up to 99 on the bottom number, that doesn't work for us. Now, I will tell you, you know, as you well know, Shelley, when you're talking about bottom numbers in the low 90s, top numbers just above 140, the evidence is not that strong, but we have made a commitment to go no higher than 140 over 90 in the U.S., mm-hmm. and that's different in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Number 12, an interesting one. You talked about this when we met before the show. Number 12, routine cholesterol monitoring is not necessary if a patient takes a recommended dose of statins unless you have other risk factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've seen that. I've seen different providers do that different ways. They'll screen everybody over 20. They'll screen everybody over 40. They won't screen at all unless there are other risk factors. And what do you think? What do you think about the evidence?
There are two sets of guidelines out there, and one of them says, look, if you have above a certain percent risk for heart disease, you should be on these drugs, and above a certain percent, it should be high dose. Don't care what the numbers are. In most cases, if you're a man and you're past your mid-50s, you have maybe one other risk factor, like a family history, then or you're obese, then you should just go on these drugs. Another one says, well, we got to get the number. We got to get the number to a certain target. Now, most cardiologists believe that you need to treat to the target, but there is that second, and apparently the British doctors, again, this consensus group says, no, you don't really need to treat the target. You need to look at their risk factor and put them on either high dose or low dose statin and avoid those testings. Number 17, babies' hearts do not require electronic monitoring during labor unless the mother is at higher risk of complications than normal. I believe electronic monitoring is absolutely universal in the United States. 22, the PSA test, prostate-specific antigen, screening for cancer does not extend life expectancy unless you have a family history or predisposition to prostate cancer. That's sort of what we've been saying here. We do not recommend routinely screening men with a PSA test if they are at average risk. If, in fact, you have a family history or you're an African-American, you have a higher risk of prostate cancer, yes, but otherwise, no. Now, a lot of people still get screened. The official recommendation is talk to your doctor. There is not strong scientific evidence that it helps, but if you yourself are willing to put up with watching a positive result or getting additional tests and surgeries, you may want to get it. But unless you're above average risk, we don't routinely recommend it anymore. 29 was controversial. Chemotherapy should be minimized in advanced cancer treatment if it is unlikely to be beneficial and may cause harm. Well, chemotherapy just about always may cause harm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I think there's no doubt about that. Benefits, unlikely to be beneficial is a tough one because it's hard for us to know. We're not sure that chemotherapy is beneficial in advanced cancer. That's a tough call.
Right, right.
You've seen that in some of your patients. I mean, mm-hmm. And it's more of a personal decision than any kind of official recommendation. Oh, this right. cancer, this chemotherapy is unlikely to be beneficial. I thought that was a strange one.
Yeah, yeah.
Routine scanning after cancer treatment is only necessary when beneficial to the patient. Okay. who would argue with that? But that doesn't really help you make decisions. I thought that was pretty bad. That was number 32.
Right.
I wish we had more time. I wish we could go on and talk about more of these because there are some fascinating ones up in the upper 30s. But unfortunately, we've got to get off the air. Rick, are you still with us?
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these words, which Rick will read, which came from an anti-flu vaccine website.
ABC News has reported that flu shots may actually set you up for less broad protection than if you get and recover from a natural influenza infection.
Now, that's true, but the key is if you recover from the natural influenza infection.
I do like that, if.
Yeah.
Research in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases found that vaccine-induced protection against influenza was greatest among those not vaccinated during the prior 5 years.
So you avoid vaccine for 5 years to get a little stronger response to the vaccine when you do take it.
Now you're getting it.
Yeah, once again, if you survive those 5 years.
Unfortunately, instead of warning the public that annual flu shots may carry unknown risks and cause effects that are not well understood, public health officials continue to promote them as a panacea for influenza prevention.
We at Health Matters hereby warn you that there are unknown things that we don't know and effects that we don't understand very well.
And we really don't know them.
Whatever you do, get a flu shot and don't take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of healthcare on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.